Hamilton native Bob Hunter just published a collection of his favorite sports stories from four decades as a Columbus Dispatch sports writer. He spent 23 years at the Dispatch as sports columnist, roaming Ohio to write about the Reds and the Bengals and the Browns, in addition to the Buckeyes. The Hamilton Garfield High School graduate spent plenty of time down here in Cincinnati. In fact, he was the secretary for the Cincinnati's chapter of the Baseball Writers Association of America. His new book, Players, Teams, and Stadium Ghosts, Bob Hunter on Sports, also includes some delightful off-the-beaten-path stories like Bevo Francis, who scored a NCAA record 113 points for tiny Rio Grande College in 1954. Bob joins us by phone from his Columbus home. Welcome to Around Cincinnati, Bob.
Great. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
So I want to start on the cover page of the book. Why did you call it Players, Teams, and Stadium Ghosts? Tell me about the title.
The title was actually changed. The stadium ghost thing was always in there. I write a lot of sports history stuff, and, you know, there's some references in there to old coaches and players who played a long time ago, and so that was kind of where the stadium ghost went. There is a column in there that mentions stadium ghosts.
Exactly. It was a great column from 2002 about visiting old ballparks back when I think Columbus was trying to figure out what to do with Cooper Stadium. And you wrote about the old parks you had visited, including Crosley Field, when it was an auto impoundment lot filled with tow cars. But you grew up down here, so you went there as a kid to see baseball games, too. So tell me about Crosley Field.
I loved Crosley Field. I was actually there at the last game at Crosley Field, which I thought was very sad. I was not happy the first time I visited Riverfront and saw Riverfront Stadium as, you know, the successor to Crosley Field. It was kind of like, oh, my God, this is what we've replaced Crosley Field with. But, I mean, I went there as a kid. I loved it. And then after they had moved out, and Jim Massey, who worked at the Columbus Dispatch, also worked at the Hamilton Journal with me, we grew up two blocks apart in Hamilton. And we went to Crosley Field, got in there, talked the guy into letting us in, took some pictures of the place with these cars impounded. It was a very sad day seeing this. We both got out of there with a seat. And I actually got up on Jim's shoulders and took this sign down. It says Portal Number 7. I don't know why it was still there. Almost everything was gone. We slid it out under the back by where the clubhouse was. And it's like, yeah, it was a sad moment. But, you know, as I said, I really felt bad when they left.
So a line in that column, I even wrote it down. It says, ballparks are almost human to me, and cleared sites seem like graves. Why are baseball parks sacred grounds to you?
I always think of all the people who go to the games over the years, not just the games themselves with the great players or the bad players or whatever, but I also think about kids going to the park with their fathers when they're little kids and people going with their grandfathers or a family going on a Sunday. Actually, Crosley Field, I have a photo in my mind of there at the corner of Finley and Western Avenue. There's a picture of that corner during the 1939 or 1940 World Series, and there's all these people out in the street, and they're all over the place. And then you kind of go down there now, and it's just a corner.
In my mind, at that corner, there's Peanut Jim Sheldon with his peanut cart to get a little brown paper bag filled with peanuts out there on that corner.
That's what I mean. It's just a really special place, especially when you're a kid. Being a kid and being at the park like that, it's like going to an amusement park almost.
Of course, being based in Columbus, you've got a lot of stories about Ohio State, but you have something in the book I thought for everybody. Story one is about Johnny Cueto's Reds debut. Another one about the Indians losing the 2007 World Series to Miami. Boomer Esiason when he returned to the Bengals at age 36 back in 1997. Derek Jeter playing for the Clippers. The firing of Tony Perez, and then when Tony and Sparky Anderson and Marty Brenneman and Carlton Fisk all went to the Baseball Hall of Fame. And one of my favorites, Pete Rose selling Pete Rose Ballpark Cafe Hit King Pizza at a Kroger store back in 1993. I love that one.
That was one of my favorites. It was also one of my favorite days. I got up that Sunday. I had to write that day. I didn't know what I was going to write. I saw this little thing in the paper about Pete was going to be at this Kroger store on South High Street promoting this Hit King pizza. And I thought, well, this ought to be interesting. So I, you know, got in the car and drove down there. I went in the store. He was set up in the frozen food section of Kroger's. And there was this huge line of people. I mean, just a huge line of people. And he's sitting at this table with this other guy. And I walked up. Of course, I knew Pete from covering the team and been around the Reds for a long time. And I kind of walked up there and I said, hey, Pete. And he goes, oh, hi, Bob. I said, hey, going to have a few minutes after this is over. I'd like to talk to you. And he goes, oh, no. When this is over, I'm going to have to go. He said, I have to go right away. So he looks at this guy next to him, and he hits him on the shoulder, and he said, get up. He's a sports writer. So this guy gets up. I then find out that the guy was the president of the pizza company. You know, Pete tells him to get up, and I sit down there with him for probably, I don't know, an hour and a half, and these people are coming up. And they've got all sorts of stuff they're trying to get him to sign. You know, one guy showed up with a picture of Johnny Bench, you know, and Pete's like, no, I'm not signing that. Get out of here. I'm signing these. So he's hitting on, you know, good-looking young women, and he's talking to me the whole time about Bart Giamatti and the whole thing. And so the thing finally gets just about over with. There's no line now. And this guy walks up wearing a Bengals shirt. He's got a couple groceries in his hands. He just walks up without looking, and he looks up, and he goes, oh, hi, Pete, as if you would be in the Kroger store on South High Street in Columbus, and you'd expect to see Pete Rose sitting in the frozen food section there, you know, just like, oh, hi, Pete, and he goes, oh, you're selling pizza now? And Pete goes, yeah, get some pizza over there.
So you wrote like 7,000, 6,000 stories for the Dispatch, and the book has like about 140, 150. Yeah. How hard was it to cut it down to that number?
Yeah, it was terrible. That's probably columns. I have more stories than that, but that's just probably columns. So, and that's what I started out doing. So I go through all of these, and maybe I narrow it down to 500 or something. Then you kind of narrow it down again, and then you start getting into, oh, my God, how do I decide between this one or this one? And, you know, the last 10 or so were painful, and I'm sure that would have been the same case if I'd have had 175 instead of 140 or whatever. It would always be that way, I'm sure. Because there's some you feel like have to be in there. You know, like I couldn't really do a book like this and not, say, have Ohio State's national championships in there. But I added a few things, one of which was a thing about the 1919 Reds that I had done way back in 1981. Jim Massey and I had gone over in the 70s and interviewed Ed Rausch at his house in Oakland City, Indiana.
Wow.
For the Reds 1919, which was, of course, the World Series and the Black Sox. I had like a three-hour tape of this. And at one point, Ed Rausch had said that he thought there were some players on the Reds who had also tried to throw games during that series, which it was just kind of in the middle of all this stuff, and it was kind of like, yeah, he was kind of an ornery old guy, and maybe he didn't mean that. But then several years later, I was going to Michigan for an Ohio State basketball game with Michigan, and I had seen where Ray Fisher, who was one of the 1919 Reds, was a pitcher, had been a Michigan baseball coach and still lived there. And he was like 91 years old. So I thought, well, I'm going to see if I can talk to Ray Fisher. So I did, and I went there, and I just in the course of talking to him, I brought this up. I said, you know, Ed Rausch had said he thought maybe some Reds players were throwing games. And Ray Fisher says, oh, boy, I don't know if I want to get into that. I don't know if I want to get my name into that. And I said, well, you know, he named these guys. And Ray Fisher sat there for a second and said he saw the same things I did.
But
wow, this is pretty unbelievable. I got two guys now from that team saying they thought these pitchers for the Reds had thrown games. So there's only one other 1919 player left who is still alive. Larry Kopf was living in a Cincinnati nursing home. So I thought, well, I'm going to go try to get him. And I went down there and talked to him. And he was, unfortunately, they said, come in the morning. That's his best time or whatever. And I went there in the morning, and it really wasn't his best time because he said, did I play? And that was kind of the end of that. But I did write the story because I thought it was different. And when I was putting this book together, I thought, you know, I wrote that a long time ago, and at the time it just kind of got passed off, and I thought these guys are long gone, but it is kind of a significant thing, so I added that to the book.
Well, this has been fun. I got time for one last question, and it's about your beautiful column you wrote back in 96 about growing up and listening to baseball on the radio, and it still resonates today with Marty Brenneman's retirement. But here's my question. Where was Hinkle and Schmidt's Sunoco station in Hamilton where you worked in high school?
It was in Lindenwald at the corner of Bell Avenue and Pleasant Avenue. Raymer's Hardware was across the street. It was very interesting. They had all of their regular customers, and people came through there. But Al Hinkle was a big Reds fan, and Norm Schmidt was too. But they would have the Reds game on every night. The place was open until 9 o'clock. Game would come on, and we'd have the pregame show on, and then the game. And I just remember how much you anticipated the game being on, and hearing the stories, and hearing the, you know, the whole thing. And, I think something is lost just because everything now, we've got every game's on TV of every sport, you know, and so we're just so inundated with events and sports and so on and so forth. And, you know, in those days, you know, that was like summer evening, not much business, kind of sitting around there with this game being broadcast there and hearing the same voices, you know, you almost feel like the broadcast team are your friends, you know, and they're telling you this, and you know who pitched yesterday, and you know who's pitching tomorrow, and you know who's in a slump and who's not. I don't know. I think, you know, we still have that today, but unfortunately, baseball and radio has kind of gone the way as, you know, baseball and newspapers, for example. It's just kind of been overwhelmed by the other stuff that's going on. So
I got to tell you, I still turned down this TV sound and watched TV with the radio sound, but I often said, particularly with Marty and Joe and Marty, that the pictures were often better on radio, and radio reached the imagination that watching TV never touches.
Well, the beauty of Marty and Joe, I mean, Marty wasn't afraid to say anything, as you know. Marty would tell you what he thought no matter what. And Joe is such a unique figure. I mean, he was just, you know, I mean, he was Joe. And I still remember at one point hearing a game when Joe was broadcasting, and he was doing the play-by-play, and here's the pitch. Oh, my God, you should have seen that. Well, you know, and it's kind of like, Joe, you're supposed to be telling us what's going on. You know what I mean? But that was Joe. I mean, you would always forgive his lack of smoothness, maybe. You know, he was just a lovable guy, and he was good on the radio, and he and Marty were great together. And like I said, I loved listening to those guys. I obviously wish Marty the best. Sorry that he's going, because I think he was a treasure.
We're going to leave it at that. Bob, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure, John. I appreciate it.
I've been speaking to Bob Hunter, retired sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. You'll find a link to his new book, Players, Teams, and Stadium Ghosts, Bob Hunter on Sports, on our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm John Kieswetter.